It's hard to know what to preach to you this morning. It feels a little off topic. It feels a little tone wrong to talk about Moody Cow breaking a window and putting sparkles in a jar when people are dying and bleeding in the streets. I had us sing Nada te turbe, nothing can trouble, nothing can frighten. And I wonder if that rang a little bit hollow, because there is plenty to trouble and plenty to frighten in our world. It's hard to know what to preach when things are like that, and frankly, I'm a little bit mixed up myself. I am still picking glitter out of my hair from being at the LGBT Choral Festival in Denver with six of my closest friends and basking in the joy of that experience. And at the same time, I am exhausted, and I think you can hear a little bit sick from being at two conferences in a row. And I want to be able to preach to you something that makes sense of where we are as a world, where we are as a nation, where we are as a community, when violence continues, when, in particular, violence with a racial tinge continues, and we don't know how to stop it, and we don't know how to make sense of it. I want something that will make sense of it, that will give you wisdom, that will equip all of us to go forth in equipped for the struggle for justice and understanding what's going on in our world. And I don't know that I have all of that for you this morning. And the only thing that I know how to do, and this is probably why I'm a minister and not something else, is to start with spiritual practice and religious community, which is actually what this sermon was going to be on anyway. To talk about the power of turning to, maybe it's the mind jar meditation, maybe it is prayer, maybe it is singing, when we don't know where else to go. I came to this practice of turning to spiritual practice when I don't know where else to turn from experiences in my own life, experiences of anxiety, depression, difficulty, and finding that along with, of course, healthy self-care, professional mental health care, that spiritual practice actually is what helps me find some semblance of calm in the storm, whether it is the outer storm or the inner storm of emotions and feelings. And of course, those two are related. So that's what we're going to do today. I don't, of course, mean that the only thing we should do in the face of trauma, in the face of violence in our world, is to offer our thoughts and prayers, because that's, of course, not enough. But that is where I think we start. I think it starts with when we name the reality, when we watch very honestly both what is happening in the world and in our inner selves, and that we create the space where we can listen for the voice of love, the voice of community, the voice of hope calling us forward. It has been said, and I think attributed to many great religious leaders, I saw it variously attributed to the Dalai Lama, St. Francis, Martin Luther, and Martin Luther King. You should sit in meditation for 20 minutes a day, unless you're too busy, and then you should sit for an hour. And I will be honest that this is not something that I am always able to fully embody and act on. The idea of busyness as a status symbol is too ingrained in me, and from growing up in this society, it feels hard to make space for silence and meditation when so much is happening. And at the same time, I know that it is deeply true. When I worked at the First UU Church of San Diego, we practiced sitting meditation together as a staff on our busiest day of the week. It was a Tuesday. We had meetings all day. And it often felt absurd in the midst of that busiest day to say, we're going to go leave the email inbox behind and sit quietly for 40 minutes. But early on in my year, the year that I spent there, I noticed that when I would go afterward, I felt more grounded, I felt a little bit less frantic, I felt a little bit more patient, and more connected to the source that called me into this work in the first place. For years, that has been praying or singing or meditating has been where I go. When my dad was sick last year, sometimes I couldn't do anything except for sit with my own grief and hope. Last month, when people were killed in the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, and I first felt like my group was a target of hate violence, what I knew how to do was to sing and to pray and to meditate. I deeply believe that for our own well-being and in order to do the work that we are called to do to heal the world, we need emotional and spiritual grounding and self-care. And I think that is especially true for those of us, those of you maybe, who belong in some way to a group that is marginalized. Audre Lorde, who is described herself as a Black lesbian mother warrior poet, wrote that for those who were never meant to survive, caring for oneself is not self-indulgence. It is self-preservation, and that is an act of political warfare. So that's what we're going to do. We'll meditate, we'll pray, we'll sing, we'll name where we are and listen for a call of love. And the practices that help me are really rooted in that first part, which is the naming. In the story, Peter, who is the moody cow, is told by his wise grandfather to name his angry thoughts as he puts the glitter in the jar. That one's the bad dream. That one's the frustrating sister. That one's the angry cow running into the side of the truck. The naming and the observing is crucial to helping him cope. This comes from like real meditation instruction, which focuses on noticing and observing the inner and outer landscapes. Grandfather Cow keeps asking, and what else? And what else? And what else? And that's what I do when I do what I call praying. It's mostly about naming what is true, what is happening, and especially the confused and the anxious and the troubled things. Prayer for me is a way of acknowledging and naming those. And as I do that, I find that I have a sense of settling, of my energy sinking down, coming from this sort of frenetic, anxious moment to a rooted stillness. And it doesn't mean falsely creating that stillness, though. I've tried that. Naming what is happening doesn't mean trying to change it and trying to fix it, and that is hard for me. I wonder if it's hard for you. I wonder if, like me, you feel pressure to always look on the bright side, to always try to think positively. In the realm of anxiety, this trying to change and fix looks like just trying hard to relax, trying to pretend it's not happening, I'm not feeling anxious, fighting against adrenaline, trying to discredit and fight with every thought, every worried thought. And despite a lot of trying, that has never worked for me. Someone once asked me, how do you cope with your anxiety? And I said some things and about, you know, watching and accepting. And he said, well, and of course, then the goal is to get rid of it, right? And I said, you know, that has never worked for me. That is like taking the jar, the mind jar, which is all shaken up and with sparkles are whirling, and trying to stop the glitter with my hands. Thich Nhat Hanh puts it this way: we should treat our anxiety, our pain, our hatred, and passion gently, respectfully, not resisting it, but living with it, making peace with it, penetrating into its nature by meditation on interdependence. Not resisting it, but living with it. In the realm of addressing the anxiety in the larger world, I think we also have this pressure to think positively, to move too fast, to we should all just get along, to move too fast, to things are going to be fine, we can figure it out. And I think this impulse to think positively can be overly simplistic at best, and at worst it actually is a form of denial. It's a form of denial that I think keeps some of those structures of violence and oppression in place. Spiritual power is rooted in knowing and speaking what is true, what is real, what is present, as deeply as we understand it. Knowing, of course, that we all have different pieces of the truth, and that given our differences in experience, those truths are going to look different. Here is the truth as I most deeply understand it about where we are today. We come together this morning wrestling with not just with the violence and pain and trauma in our own lives and in the world. We entered this week already full of the joys and the sorrows and the concerns in ourselves and in the congregation and in the immediate community. We entered with all those things. Angry thoughts of exhaustion and fear and sickness and the responsibilities that we have to care for one another, whether those responsibilities are joyful, whether those responsibilities are painful. This is our regular everyday grief and sorrow and fear and loss. And this is the death of Alton Sterling, the death of Philando Castile, and the death of all of the five officers in Dallas. This is the history of violence against people of color in this country. This is the history of violence so often perpetrated by police, by the criminal justice system. This is the despair that I think we can often feel when faced with a world that is both so beautiful and so broken and so tangled in so many ways. This is the fear faced by many of the people in our community experiencing homelessness who have been faced with assault. This is the reality of what it is to live life on the border. And this is the reality of what it's like to live wrestling with holding together both the need for justice and accountability in our systems and to uphold the humanity and dignity of the people who work within those systems, whether it is the police, whether it is the Border Patrol, whether it is the military. And this is the fear that I hear from my friends who are people of color, especially, and LGBT people and undocumented people, especially in these weeks and months that we are living through. I'm going to let that stir. As we face and name the reality of where we are and what we're experiencing, I think that helps us make space to hear more clearly where we are called to go. This is what my friend Natalie Perkins from seminary wrote this week on Thursday morning. She is a Black woman. She's a minister. I spent the morning bawling. Philando's girlfriend praying during the live feed, learning that he would be 33, the age Jesus died, if he lived until Friday. Alton's 15-year-old son breaking down during the press conference. It's traumatic, y'all. This is traumatic. Two Black people killed by police in less than 24 hours. And she continues, I left an outdoor concert at Lincoln Center around 9 p.m. last night and walked to the Columbus Circle stop. And as I passed the mall, I saw a group of police officers reaching into the trunks of police cars, pulling out assault rifles, loading clips, putting on bulletproof vests. That shit is scary to witness. I knew I needed to get out of there as quickly as possible. My pace quickened. The person I was with seemed surprised by my new pace. He, a white guy, hadn't even noticed the three police cars sitting literally directly in front of the mall with the cops arming themselves. This was in plain sight, but he didn't see it. And she concludes, friends, we need you to pay attention. Our lives depend on it. And now I have to muster the courage to go out today. And she quotes from Psalm 23, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. And she says, I need that you, not just to be God. I need that to be you, too. We listen closely in this mixed up moment for the call of love. And when I do that, I start to hear something. It's something calling me to show up for the people who need me, people like Natalie, to cry with them, and then to allow those tears to open me to transformation. A call to be the justice that rolls down like water and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. I honestly don't know what that will be like. But I know that when I am rooted in knowing and speaking the truth in community and listening for the call of love, I'm ready for it.